Hello, everyone. It's Jenny Heckman here. And today on Jenny's Tattletales with Andrea, we're going to be doing an interview with Dr. Randy Overbeck. And he has the Haunted Shores Mystery Series. And he has a new book coming out September 13th. And it is called Scarlet at Crystal River. And it's a paranormal mystery, but it's also a Christmas mystery, he told me. So I'm so excited to get into this with you and find out all about it. Welcome, Randy. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a delight to be here, ladies, with both of you. I'm thrilled to be able to share the great news about my new book.
Perfect. Well, let's go right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Scarlet at Crystal River?
All right, well, let me first kind of give your listeners a primer on the series. So the series is called The Haunted Shores Mysteries, and there are three books in the series. The Scarlet is the third one. Each one takes place at a different haunted shore. So the first haunted shore was on the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay. That was called Blood on the Chesapeake. The second one takes place on the East Coast, haunted seaport on the eastern shore, a place called Cape May. Oh. And the third one, I take our intrepid ghost hunter to Florida, the Gulf Coast of Florida. Yeah. Actually, in the story arc, he and his girlfriend, who we meet in the first story, and he gets engaged at the end of the second novel, they're on their honeymoon to Florida over the Christmas holidays.
Oh, what?
He's a teacher. So he has that time off, so they're taking their time to go down there and where they encounter some new ghosts.
I love it. Why ghosts? What got you excited about that?
I was intrigued. I was actually at a writing conference, probably 6 years ago, maybe longer before I started writing these. And I really didn't have any intentions of incorporating ghost stories into it. And I went to a session from an actual ghost hunting company. They don't charge money. Ghost hunting organization.
Oh.
And I was fascinated by what they shared in terms of the scientific way they go about checking for ghosts, recording for ghosts. It was absolutely fascinating. So it got me started thinking about, well, what if I put that little piece into the story in terms of it? And one of the things that I try to do, I work really, really hard. I do a lot of research for all my books, but I do a lot of research on ghosts. And I try real hard to create the ghost stories that are as close to what we have documented about ghosts as possible.
Oh, wow.
So if you have readers out there that are commonly ghosts, they like to read ghost stories, nearly all the ghost stories fall into two different categories. Either A, they are the Stephen King kind of ghost story where it's terrifying and you are up all night worried about it. Okay. Yeah. Or Dean Cooper,
there are
a number. Or they are the what I call Casper the Friendly Ghost type, where there's this friendly ghost and they live in a bookstore or and it's almost always a cozy. And I like all of those. I'm not taking anything away from either of those. But neither of those are really at all close to the reality of what we've learned about how ghosts interact with the living.
Oh, okay.
So what I did is I tried to use that research and build that into each story. I do take some literary license, I will admit, but most of the way ghosts interact with Daryl, my hero, is actually what's been documented as how ghosts have made themselves known to the living.
Oh, wow. Can you share what that is?
I mean, there are several different ways. So for example, there are lots of instances where ghosts are able to make an impression on a film, on a photograph that the human beings didn't see the ghost visually. So somehow it doesn't register with our sight, but when the film is developed, and more recently digital, but they come out. So just to show you how I did that in the book. So first of all, the books take place 20 some years ago. This particular book we're talking about takes place during the Christmas holidays of 1999 towards New Year's of 2000. So Daryl and Aaron, you ladies will probably remember this, at that time when you got married, you had these little cameras, disposable cameras, sitting
yeah.
at every table.
I have them on my bed.
Well, I have them take some of those cameras on their trip, and they're taking pictures with their trip. Well, they end up taking pictures, and when they end up taking some of the pictures, they find out that in the back of the picture, a couple pictures, there's an image of ghosts, the ghosts that that are haunting them. So that's just kind of an example of how I built in the reality into the story.
They always make it sound so kind of almost negative too, the haunting part, you know, where maybe they're not necessarily haunting. Maybe they're just curious, or maybe they have like something unfinished, or I'm assuming, I'm not sure.
Well, in each of my stories, the ghosts are really the victims, not the persecutors.
Yeah.
But they do come off to the living as being haunted, because we don't really know. Well, I mean, it's, so in the first book, the ghost that appears to Daryl is the ghost of a very large black student who had been hung in the high school 30 years earlier. Okay. Ooh. So the image of that gossamer ghost is enough to scare him.
Oh, sure.
In the second book, the ghost is the ghost of a haunted bride who had been killed, and the image of her injuries show up on her clothes and her face, and that makes it scary to Daryl and then to the reader, at least initially.
Yeah.
The third book, I was going for something different, but you still, if you want to keep the readers, you still have to keep that eerie aspect of it. So in this case, the ghosts are actually the ghosts of two murdered children, ages 5 and 6.
Okay.
And in each of the books, the ghosts are after Daryl because they know that he's a sensitive. He can see things that other, you know, humans can't, and they are wanting him to help find justice for them.
Okay. Okay.
Are you one of those people? What is Randy?
I didn't hear that. Ask again.
Can you sense ghosts?
No. Am I a sensitive? No, I'm not a sensitive.
Yeah.
I know people who are and have shared their stories with me, but I don't claim that ability, and I've never had a personal ghost experience. Everybody always asks me that. This is purely not personal experience.
I really, really love the premise, and I love the idea of centering in scientific fact, and you know, those kinds of things. That's really cool. That's a nice little spin on it without it being too too much storytelling, right? Too much of the cozy, like you were just saying, you know, one extreme or the other extreme. There is kind of somewhere in the middle, maybe, that you can meet, and that's really, really cool. I like that.
Well, you guys know, as authors, you're trying to find a niche that isn't already occupied, you know?
Right?
So yeah. I'm hoping this is something different. And you know, the first book became Blood on the Chesapeake became an Amazon and Barnes & Noble bestseller this summer. So it's catching on. So I'm hoping this kind of keeps rolling. You know, that's my intent anyway.
Absolutely. Perfect. That's perfect. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask a couple questions here, I guess, that you know, so as writers during COVID, a lot of us were very, very productive because we were forced to stay home. So what is the one positive thing that you have learned you are capable of as an author that you learned was possible during the COVID lockdown?
Well, I think all of us have seen things coming out of the pandemic that have turned out to be a positive we thought was a negative. Though one of the things that would probably be for me is people often ask, how long does it take for you to write books? I'm sure they ask you that all the time. Yeah. How long did it take for you to write that book? The first book took 18 months. The second book, about 12 months. That's kind of more the norm. This book took 3 months.
Yeah.
Because I had so many other things I could not do. I spent a lot more time simply at the computer getting the story up to where I liked it to be. Now, 3 months, it took a lot of time after that in editing and all that. But I'm talking about going from, oh, I have this idea, I'm going to start, till when you're able to get that final first draft, the first draft finally all the way done.
Yeah.
And that was probably a cut 9 months. This would, without a doubt, without COVID, this book would have been coming out the following year. There's no question in my mind.
Right.
It would have been out in 22, not 21.
Yeah.
So that's
I think I got 3 out that year, and it was just, and the same exact thing. You know, you go from just having all of this time to write, you know, that you just had no distractions, no anything else. So yeah, it's, you know, in that regard as a writer, it was a very, that part of it was positive. What's most important to you? Strong characters, mind-blowing plot twists, epic settings? Do you have, is there one particular thing that you think is better than another?
I don't know. It's pretty hard to make a value judgment. In my case, these are called Haunted Shores Mystery. So the setting becomes very, very critical. So in each case, the setting, not just, oh, it's a nice place to be, but the setting has to, the story has to emanate from the setting. So I think I shared with you, like on the Chesapeake Bay, that setting, in addition to being absolutely one of the most gorgeous places in the United States, is also this place of contrast and racism, because you have these dueling cultures in this same area of this very redneck Southern Confederate culture and this very New England fishing shipping culture. In Cape May, it's a very different thing. It was but Cape May is also along one of the highways that has where most of the human trafficking is being done on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. So the setting itself lent to the bigger arc of the story. In the new book, I wanted to go to Florida. And here's the great news. We made the trip to do the research in Florida, 2 weeks of research, 2 days before they locked, 2 weeks before they locked everything down.
Oh, so you were lucky to get around. And
so if we had not done that, I would have been working on another book, because I wouldn't have had any research, because I do a lot of research in the town and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was looking for what I try to find in my books is, instead of places that everybody knows about. Okay. We're not going to Myrtle Beach. We're not going to Fort Lauderdale. We're not doing Miami. We're not doing Virginia Beach. I'm looking for places that are kind of unique. And so we did research all over Florida, and I came up with this wonderful town that I'd never heard of before and just fell in love with it. The Crystal River is a very small town. It's very old Florida. It's not commercial. It's not, it has a beach, but it's not a huge beach. It just has a lot of unique characters. It has freshwater springs. It's the only place in the world you can swim with manatees. They have these wonderful bike trails that go through the woods and the swamps and along. It's just a remarkable place. So out of that became the story for that setting became the central theme in this one is about abuse of migrants, how we abuse migrants in terms of the work that they do in the fields and stuff. So those became a natural meld because of where I was in Florida. And then real close by is where all this work is done. So I don't know that means the settings are most important, because people love my central characters, and I work really hard to make them understandable, credible, realistic.
Yeah.
Plots are important, but I'm not sure. I mean, all of my books are whodunits, but I'll be perfectly honest, other people write better, more convoluted mysteries than I do. Hands down, that's the case. My mysteries are different in the sense that, so if you're a mystery writer or a mystery lover, you know, the rule, one of the rules is, yeah, I have to have a body on the first page or the first chapter or,
yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, in my book, that happens. Daryl always encounters the victim in the first chapter, but because the victim is a ghost, he has no idea who the victim is, how the victim died, even how to find out all that. So the mystery becomes, I have to get to that first before we can unravel, well then, who could have possibly, in this case, killed these two poor 5 and 6 year old Latino kids?
Yeah. Well, I understand what you're saying about
that's setting. Kind of one of them.
It's kind of like an extra character, right? Your setting is kind of like an extra character in a way. And then I understand that you also like to kind of thread those social issues in with your books too. So that's kind of another little twist that you kind of do.
And I try to make sure that the social issue emanates from the setting. It's a natural blend with the setting itself.
Yeah. That's really interesting. It's an interesting way to do it. That's really great. I like that. I guess I didn't ask before, but do you have a newsletter?
I do have a newsletter.
Okay. How would somebody benefit from getting your newsletter as opposed to somebody else's?
I'm not sure I have a good answer to that question. Basically, my newsletter keeps my readers informed about either three things. Obviously, my books and what's happening in terms of what awards did they recently win, those kinds of things. That's one. Or it keeps them apprised of the ghost angle because they love hearing new stories about ghosts and stuff.
Yeah.
Or I do use my newsletters to talk about the themes that I'm dwelling on. So during last January, I think, when it was Human Trafficking Month, I spent a lot of time in my newsletter acquainting people with organizations that fight human trafficking, you know.
Love
so
that.
Those are the three things that people would get. But my newsletters are very modest. That I only do a newsletter once or twice a month. I'm trying to get better at it. In fact, this month I'm going to incorporate a blog into the newsletter.
Oh,
they can just click on and what's going on. But that's new for me. So that's
You'll find it kind of easy. You know, when I first started this, Andrea was the one that had done had a lot of interaction with the whole podcast and the videos and things. I'd never done anything like it, and I was really resistant about it because I thought, well, what am I going to say and how's this going to come across? And in a year, I have found that I really actually like doing them better than writing out a blog, because the reason I like doing these with the authors is it is a way to make you very, very personal to an audience. You know, they get to see you, they get to see your mannerisms, they get to listen to you talk, and then they get to hear your passion for your projects in the video. So I think you're gonna find that you might like it. It is a different way.
I like it because we learn so many new things that a blurb, you know, somewhere a blurb we will not be able to tell about a book.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah,
you're
right.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very
it's a challenge for me, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, good luck with it. I do hope that you find it just as interesting and fascinating as I have. It's been great. How do you come up with the names for your characters or the characters themselves? Are they just a figment of your imagination? Are you basing them off of people that you meet that are in with some of these social issues that you do? How do you come up with that?
Not the social issues part. Now, before I did writing on a relatively full-time basis, I was an educator for 39 years. So I have a lot of experience with every range, teachers, para assistants, principals, administrators, board members, parents. And what I've done to create my characters is I've used elements of those individuals I know to create real credible characters.
Yeah.
Daryl, for example, is based, Daryl's passion and knowledge about his subject is based on a teacher I worked with. He doesn't look like Daryl at all, but I kind of got the idea for how somebody would be that excited and that interested. He's a history teacher, loves history, and infuses that love in his kids. And I had a teacher that I worked with that did that really well. So I kind of crafted the character. And most of my characters are based on are composites of individuals I've worked with before.
I love that.
I think it makes them more credible, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you get their little ticks in there. What, you know, facial expressions, everyone has something different. It's like a thumbprint, you know, everybody's different. So it is really interesting. What is your favorite part?
And
go ahead.
But to finish the question, I am always watching in crowds. I do a lot of people watching to kind of make sure that I'm making that. And a lot of my books have kids in.
Yeah.
Have students. So I try to make sure that I'm watching so it represents how the students would react as well. So.
Yeah, because they do have their own language, don't they?
And even though I have to capture the way that language was in 1999.
Yeah.
Not today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's an interesting challenge. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. 1990s. Yeah. That was completely different than even.
Well, there's so many words that we use today that are burning around.
Andrea is Romanian. And so coming over here, I've understood from many people that coming over here to the States, we actually have one of the hardest languages to kind of replicate because we do have so much slang. So, and different variations and things of stuff. So it's I always think that's kind of fascinating when I meet somebody that's from a different country. What is your favorite part of the writing life? What do you enjoy most about it?
You know, that's difficult for me to answer. I've been very fortunate pre-pandemic, and it's just starting now. I've had the opportunity to interact with lots and lots of my readers. I do a couple of different programs that I offer to groups that have been very popular. I have a program called Things Still Go Bump in the Night, which is about ghosts. Oh. And tells them about ghost backgrounds, and they're kind of surprised at the number of famous, intelligent, successful people who believe in ghosts. And then I show them examples of actual ghost pictures, and that's been very, very popular. And then I segue and then talk about my books when I do that. So because of that, I have a chance to interact with lots of readers. And I think anytime that somebody comes up and goes, oh, I read Blood on the Chesapeake. I started on a Monday. I finished it Tuesday. I couldn't, I'm going to get, there isn't anything much better for the writing life than have somebody tell me.
That's true. So
that's part of it. But I'll be honest.
I'm one of those readers. I don't like to put down the book because I feel like I'm missing out. Like, yeah. So many things can happen during the day. Like, I want to find out as soon as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
But I love the research. You know, most people don't like to do that. I really enjoy, though. So here's an example. In the first book, if you've read Blood on the Chesapeake, it takes place on the Chesapeake Bay. And one essence of Chesapeake Bay is sailing. I mean, it is has some of the most beautiful space for sailing. The bay is relatively shallow. It's a little safer. It's not like sailing out on the ocean. Anyway, I'd never sailed before. But I decided I had to have this part in there. Well, I had to do all kind of research. I had to work with people who, and I went sailing for the first, actually I did a couple times to kind of learn the language. And then I had people, and I love doing that. I love learning all that new stuff. In the new book, I love learning about swimming with manatees. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
The creatures are incredible creatures. So all of that part I really, really like.
Yeah.
And I do. I like creating the story. And the one thing that's different for me than most is I really, really love editing and revising. Now, you know, a lot of writing stuff.
That's
a wow. But
if I have a chapter that I'm working on and laboring on, and I spend the extra hours getting that chapter to be the very best it can be, man, I am just so pumped. I'm going, that's it. Yeah. This chapter will work.
Yeah.
And I love that feeling. I really do.
Yeah. I'm always kind of hoping that I get that on the first go, but it doesn't quite ever work for me.
I have heard some other, you know, more successful writers say that they do that. It's not coming to me. Not anytime soon, put it that way.
Yeah. What is coming up next for you? What are you working on now?
I'm working on the start of what will probably be another series, another mystery series. It's not at all ghost. It's not paranormal. It's more of a straight amateur sleuth mystery series.
Okay.
For one reason or another, I decided to set it in the 90s as well. It's set in 1994. It's actually it's a story about a mysterious drug that gets sold to middle schoolers, and then a bunch of middle schools that use it are in a car accident and die. Oh. And the story is about the administrator who's has to work with the cops to figure out who's pushing the drugs on these poor 11 and 12 year old kids.
Wow.
So that's what the story is.
Wow, good. Now, your other series, is that one done now, or are you going to continue writing about that?
I probably will continue it.
Yeah.
My first answer was when I envisioned the series, I had envisioned a trilogy. I thought that was kind of a natural, and there is a natural, you know, the romantic relationship gets from start to at least some kind of conclusion in the third one. But the response has been so good, I'm already working on a plot for what would be the fourth one. So
good.
I have a location, I'm working on a ghost, you know, but that'll come later. I actually have two other projects that I'm working on. So I told you about the one.
Yes.
I think, which is almost done. That one is probably 80% finished. The one about the drug in the school. The one I have on that is going to be a much greater challenge, but I'm really looking forward to it. One of the things I try to do in my writing is I always try on the next one to try something I've not done before.
Yeah.
So like Blood on the Chest, I mean, in the second book, I created a 16-year-old goth character, POV character, which was quite a challenge, but I love doing that. You know, in this new one, I one of the featured characters is a 20-something Latino character, you know, so, and I had never done a Christmas story ever before. So trying to blend a really scary mystery with a Christmas story, that was a real challenge for me. Well, anyway,
that would be a challenge.
My newest challenge, I am actually, right now I'm in the research stage of a book that will feature a teacher in colonial America during the Revolution, which actually they were tutors then, they weren't teachers, but a teacher who is also a member of the Culper Ring spying for George Washington on the British. And it'll be a thriller.
I like that.
So it's very, very different, but I like the fact that it'll be a real challenge to see if I can pull it off, but I'm kind of excited about trying.
Yeah, that is kind of, and it's a refreshing twist on something that's historical like that. That would be, right? That's more of a historical, that's a neat.
Well, and that's it. It has its roots in truth. I don't know if you know about that, but in the Culper Ring, there was a female member of the Culper Ring that they never identified ever.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to try to see if I can write this in a way so it's a fictional possible version of what might have been in the Culper Ring. And in my case, for me, what you'll find in all of my books, the educators are the heroes. So yeah, I'm always trying to find a way to make them look as a hero. So
perfect. Perfect. Well, they're pretty heroic, especially in these times. The
Portuguese. You got that right, yeah.
Okay, I guess my last question then would be, what would you most like to say to the readers and listeners out there?
I would like to ask them to, if they haven't yet had a chance to check out one of these three Haunted Shores mysteries, to make sure they at least get a chance. Right now, believe it or not, the Wild Rose Press is running a special on all three books. They can actually purchase all three books today for the cost of one ebook on Amazon.
Wow! Really?
Okay. And Apple, and that will run at least until the new book launches in a couple days. So if they've been dragging their feet and they're looking for an excuse, or they can also today for the next 3 days enter a Goodreads giveaway for the new book. And they can win it before it's even available to get to be bought.
Perfect.
If they're interested in either one of those, tell them, hit their favorite vendor and check it out.
Oh, that's
before it goes away.
That's wonderful. And we're going to have all of these links along with your spotlight. So if you are looking to link on to these different things that he's talking about, we'll have those for you there too. One other thing that I'd like to say is, if you'd like to learn more about Randy or his work, you can go onto his website, which is authorrandyoverbeck.com. Or again, you can look at our description and you can look there and see all the different links. And yes, I just really want to say thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a pleasure.
Been fun on this side too, ladies. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my stories.
Oh, great. Well, enjoy the rest of the sunshine there in Ohio. We're looking at ours too.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great, great day.
Bye-bye.
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 Okay, I think that's going to wrap it up for Jenny's Table Tales today. I hope you have an absolutely splendid day, and I want to really thank you for joining me, and I hope to hear from you and see you next time.